Welcome back to the Prepared Mindset, everybody. I'm your host, Austin, as always. And honestly, I feel like I'm telling you guys this story for like the third time. I know I talked about this on the Patreon and I think last week's episode, but 2 weekends ago now, we made our trip out to Pennsylvania, ended up spending, by we, I mean, a group of like seven of us, me and my friends, spending a day and a half at the shoot house at Ben Franklin Range in Templeton, Pennsylvania, with Blake Flannery of Orion Training Group. And Blake's been on the podcast a couple times. If you guys have been listening for a while now, you know Blake. If you don't know Blake, or if you haven't heard those, I encourage you to go ahead and hit the pause button right now and go back and check those out. I think there's two of them. Talked a lot about small unit tactics and things like that in those discussions. But this was an opportunity, at any rate, for us to head out and utilize the facility at Ben Franklin. You know, they have a great two-story shoot house. Almost all the thresholds have doors on them, and the entire upstairs is built more to like a residential scale with like narrower hallways and doors. And they had like one room set up like a classroom with a bunch of small desks and chairs and stuff. And I know there's like a set, it's not a functioning bathroom, but there's a room that's, you know, set up like a bathroom with a toilet and stuff in it. And so all this to say, like, it's a good facility. It has a lot of different looks, a lot of different layouts to train structure clearance work, whether that's, you know, a two-man clearance or three-man or four-man. I've taken several classes there at a charity event that we attend annually and stuff. So certainly I never miss the opportunity to go out and utilize that facility. But learning from Blake is something that's been on my list for a while now, and specifically wanting to learn how he would teach structure clearance work. So we went out there, spent a day and a half, and it was awesome. We had one guy with us who's never actually done any of this. So we really started foundationally and built our way up. Some of us who had been through the curriculum with Orion Training Group a couple of times had some different experiences to draw from. But then we were able to take Blake's perspective and add it to that, which to say, you know, isn't different. It's just unique to him and what he's experienced, his perspective on stuff, and held us to a pretty decent standard too. You know, we did a lot of non-verbal communicating through this. There wasn't a lot of, you know, hey, you move here, you do this, you know, directing each other and stuff, which I've experienced and even done in some instances in classes I've taken previously. So really pushed some boundaries, but it was just a great experience, you know. So all that to say that I get to sit down with Blake this week, and we get to get into structure clearance work, talk a bit about that, what we went through. We'll probably talk a little bit about stuff in the community, in the industry. Like, you know, there's a lot of hot topics when you get into CQB where people get very, very opinionated and really, really butthurt if you do, you know, certain things that they just don't agree with. You know, instead of running into a room and you take the time to move from one side of the door to the other and see what you can see inside of that that doorway, people get very bent out of shape about that. You know, and even down to, you know, door procedures and breaching and stuff. It's really convoluted and silly. But we're going to have a pretty good discussion about it tonight. We're going to sit down. We're going to go through it. I think you guys will really dig it. But before I get on over to my conversation with Blake, I want to make sure that we take the time to say thank you to some companies that we work with here in the industry and in the community, right, that make this podcast possible so I can bring episodes to you guys every week, sit reps to you guys every month, and then, you know, YouTube videos and Instagram and all that good stuff. So as a start off first with me saying thank you to my friends over at Custom Night Vision, you guys. The website is customnightvision.com, and they stock, I mean, everything. You know, if you're looking to get into night vision, they're the go-to. They also carry, though, the entire line of DNT thermal optics. And DNT is one of the fastest growing brands in thermal optics out there today. So if you're looking to get into some kind of a scope or a clip-on for your rifle or something, highly encourage you take a look at what they have to offer. There's other optics and options too. You know, the RH25 is a great tool. Actually, I had a buddy that had one on this trip to Pennsylvania we got to play with. Really neat. You know, Bluetooth's to your phone. You can do it in different spectrums and everything. Thermal is a total game changer in so many different ways, and Custom has it. That I can't encourage you guys enough to go check out what they got going on. And if you have questions about it, they have a chat function built into the website. So you can reach out to Kevin or Ben or Trevor and, you know, hey, what's the difference between this thermal scope or this, you know, this monocular night vision device? Both of them can clip onto my rifle, but which one's going to give me the greater advantage? Or maybe if you're not even trying to mess with thermal and you're just looking to get into a fantastic device, they have everything from some surplus green phosphor PBS-14s up to, you know, the latest and greatest housings from companies like Lloyd Innovations, Nocturne Industries, AB Night Vision, and tubes from Elbit, from Photonis, L3, and even NNVT if you're really trying to ball out on a budget and get access to night vision without, you know, totally and completely breaking the bank. And they carry lasers and lights from all of the top companies, including Modlight, B.E. Myers, Steiner. They even carry the Holosun Iris laser, which is in a lot of ways the new hotness for those of us looking for our best bang for buck solution. Again, you guys head on over to customnightvision.com. Check on everything they have available there. Let them know that Austin from Prepared Mindset sent you guys. They're going to take fantastic care of you. Also, want to take a moment here and say thank you to the team at Harrington Arms, you guys. Their website is harringtonarms.com. And if you're looking for a compensator, something to help fight the recoil, help manage your recoil with your handgun, and maybe improve your accuracy a bit, head on over to harringtonarms.com. Check out the entire collection of devices that they have for all kinds of different handguns, whether it's the Springfield Echelon, it's the Smith & Wesson M&P series. Obviously, it almost goes without saying now, the entire line of Glock pistols and, you know, everything from the 43 and 43X up to the 45, which is what I run, the 19, the 17, right? All kinds of great options there. And they have their Hacker system coming to the market very, very soon here, which is their proprietary barrel and QD compensator combo. I think it's going to be a huge game changer when you can just go ahead and pop that compensator off and then throw on a adapter with threads so you can switch between your compensator and your suppressor or just to a barrel weight so that you can go run in manufacturer class or whatever you call it in, you know, USPSA and things like that. Again, guys, I'm not a competition shooter. I don't know. You can laugh at me. It's all good. Head on over to harringtonarms.com. Check all of that stuff out for yourself. Pick yourself up something nice. HarringtonArms.com. Love those guys down in Ohio. But yeah, so like I said, this week I'm sitting down with Blake Flannery of Maneuver Training Solutions and Orion Training Group. We're going to get into CQB and structure clearance. We're going to talk about all that stuff. We've talked about it on this podcast before. We're going to continue to talk about it because I think it's extremely relevant. But we're also, I think, just going to get into a little bit of the methodologies. We're going to talk about some stuff I think that's a little bit disputed in the community, and answer hopefully some of the questions that you guys might have after checking out some content, seeing the stuff that was posted from the trip. So with that, let's jump on over to the discussion with Blake. Blake, welcome back to the podcast, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think after the weekend that we, how can I put this? The special weekend we shared together in Pennsylvania, it was worth sitting down and breaking it down a bit. Because I know seven of us, had a lot of positive takeaways and everything, just learning from you versus having most of us learn from like Jared and Jason and stuff like that in the past. And certainly not to say that any of it was wrong or right, but different perspective, different, learning opportunity and all that. So wanted to, you know, like I said, sit down, kind of dig into it. I know we were talking just before we hit record here. You're kind of going through some of this right now with the instructing you do with the Coast Guard, right?
Yeah. So I've been supporting one of their instructor courses, and been working in the shoot house for, you know, the past few days. So kind of touching on some of the topics that we talked about over the weekend, and just kind of stuck in like that organizational, you know, dogma and, you know, the ideas that people have on things.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because, and I've never done this professionally. I know you obviously have, and you teach it now professionally too. It's funny that people become so closed off to learning a new way to approach, like, solving the same problem. You understand everything else in the world, right? Everything else changes. We find a better way, a faster way, more efficient way. For whatever reason, structured clearance and CQB remains one of those things where it's like, well, I learned how to do this in the 90s and it works, so I don't want to hear anything different. That's probably not what you're running into, but we find it on the internet all the time with guys that insist points of domination is, the do all end all, and you just need to flood the room with bodies, and there's, not a better way. There is. There
Yeah.
is. There has to be.
Well, I mean, you see it. It's the same thing. Like, you see it a lot, in the military. A good example was, so my last 4 years before I retired from the Marine Corps, I was running the CQB program and a couple other programs for the Maritime Special Purpose Force. They had to come through their pre-deployment training program. So I would teach a full reconnaissance company, and I would give a little bit of it to some other folks. And we got tasked with supporting a reserve company, a reconnaissance reserve company. So we sent a detachment out to go train them. And I hit them up after a few days and asked them how it's going. They're like, "Man, it's going pretty well, but we're having an issue." I'm like, "All right, what is it? Walk me through it." And they're like, "There's this one guy," and they tell me the guy's name. I'm like, "Okay, I know who that is." And he literally said, he's like, "Well, this isn't the way that I did it in Iraq." And this was like 2018. Like, that dude hasn't been in Iraq since like 2007, 2008. Like, it's been a decade. And now there is some value in the fact that you have done it in combat, but to look at, you did it a certain way that you remember it, 10 years ago, and you think that it's like the only way that it can be done or should be done. And I was like, "Tell him to shut up. Tell him I said this is the way he needs to do it, and he'll listen." And they literally did that. He's like, "Oh, okay." And that was that. And that wasn't just because I'm, and it's not because I'm some awesome guru. It's because we had enough history. And I knew that if he knew the information was coming from me, I wouldn't be bullshitting. And so he, then kind of complied and stopped trying to get in the way as much. But you see it all the time. I've been there. I've been, not as open at times to new things coming out because it's like, "Hey, I'm a force recon guy. Like, I should know everything that there is to know, unless I, only people that can tell me anything new would be like a guy from Delta or a guy from, SEAL Team 6." But when I learned it, like, anybody can come up with an idea or maybe has a different experience, and it can all be valuable to me, But yeah, and there's a lot of that organizational, like, this is the way the organization does it, and so that's the only way I understand it. There's a lot of like, "Well, this is how our team does it," and it's like, cool. That doesn't mean it's the only way, and it doesn't always necessarily mean it's the right way.
Yeah, that's I think something people get caught up in, and I think we had one or two guys that got caught up in that, like. To me, it almost starts to come off as an excuse. They're like, well, we don't really have it defined as an SOP, but we totally could. We could totally do it. It's like, I almost feel like sometimes you put yourself at a disadvantage if you try to find a defined way to solve every single specific problem instead of being able to like creatively solve on the fly, if that makes sense.
Like, I had a conversation with another creator. He's also a fellow recon marine. He's still active duty, and he's like, "There's all these like these different systems of CQB." I'm like, "See, that's the problem. Like, you mentioned like points of domination or flood." I'm like, the fill, flow, and go, or flood the structure, like, that was never meant to be like, this is the tactic we're from. No, that's a concept of employing the tactics, is that, that breach goes and we want to flood the structure, as in like teams coming in, they're hitting the door, next team's right behind them, they're hitting another door, third team's behind them, they're hitting another door. And by the time the dust is settling from that breach, we should have four assault teams through the breach, each entering a room. And by the time, the fourth team is reaching their points of domination within their respective room, then that first team should be exiting and going to the next room. And that was the whole idea of like flooding the target. It wasn't meant to be like some specific way of attacking the structure. The whole points of domination. If I move into a space and I stop, I have determined that that is currently my point of domination. This is the most advantageous spot that I can move to right now to dominate this space. Maybe that's all the way to the corner. Maybe it's a few steps through the door. But like if I stop there, that is a point of domination. And it's not like that doesn't only apply to that one quote unquote system of CQB. And like you just have to approach it from understanding the principles and the fundamentals, and then apply what techniques you have available to you. What have you been taught? You know, so if you understand how to pan or pie a door, there's going to be appropriate times where that's going to be advantageous. And that exact same situation, I can change one aspect of that scenario and it's no longer viable.
Yeah.
Right? Like we talked about a lot, you know, the whole like speed versus security. Which one am I prioritizing? If I'm prioritizing security and I have the ability to, you know, kind of work a door a little bit more from the outside before I transition through the threshold, then I should do that. But if I don't have that time because there's something pulling me or pushing me somewhere else in the structure, then I'm not going to take that time.
Right.
You
Yeah,
know?
I mean, I think on a fundamental and foundational level, it's where like you talk about systems, people want to talk about why certain ones don't work, and it's like I think in a vacuum, a lot of them are good ideas, but then if you don't understand the fundamentals, the rules and shit behind it, right? Like I always come back to like the 1.5 wall, right? First, two guys go to their corner and then go halfway down the wall. And you end up in that, I think you called it a Polish ambush, right? You're literally flagging each other. Well, if you know that you're not supposed to do that, maybe you don't, penetrate as far down the wall to keep yourself at an advantageous angle. But if you only ever go to, well, I was told to always go halfway down the wall, no exceptions, full stop, then you put yourself in those bad situations. And then people look at it and go, well, now this doesn't work. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, it honestly, it probably doesn't give you a whole lot of advantages. But if you knew the principles behind it and you didn't, you were able to read the room and problem solve that, maybe you wouldn't have done those things. That's right. I like people want to, you end up like painting yourself in a corner by trying to find a set way to solve every room that you walk into. And we tried that, I think it was like the last room on day one. It gave us a ton of fits. It was like a corner fed. So you always have to do this. And the first man's always got it. It was like an adjacent room on the long wall, and we did it wrong like 17 times in a row. I would have lost my mind if I were you. I don't know how you made it through it with us, but we finally figured it out. We're like, no, let's do it. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. And figuring out like, well, this is why. This makes more sense. Even though you want to have somebody swing wide, it doesn't make sense to do that. Here's what's right. Here's what's wrong. It's way more about being able to, I think, think in the moment and problem solve than it is to just simply apply a template of movement to a room.
Yeah, and a lot of it, you know, would come down to that, and the whole like you said, like this scenario use this specific technique, and this scenario use this specific technique, and in a situation, if you were to look at like room, like yeah, like the way that this room is laid out, this is how it should go down. You know, there's a lot of good ways, but like, hey, here's like. This is going to be a really good way. This should be pretty consistent based on this layout. But then, if you get really wrapped around like doing it that way because of that layout, as soon as that layout changes, it's going to change how people have to start prioritizing their angles and who's going to go where and do what. So, you can't really fall in love with the idea of like, this is the tactic for this layout. You just, again, you default back to principle. Like, we have to cover angles, we can't drop security. And we got to be seen as fast as possibly can. So if you just work that and you allow for initiative, you know, and people are going to make mistakes. Like it's going to happen. one of the things that like we'll commonly talk about in classes is the difference between a professional and an amateur is you just won't notice the professional's mistakes, right? If you're not at that level, they'll do something, and it may not even be the guy who makes the mistake, picks it up and corrects it. It'll be the guy behind him, right? That picks up the angle that he dropped or the misstep that he took, or the guy will correct himself, but he'll just do it so quick, you wouldn't catch it. Whereas the amateur is just going to make an incredibly obvious mistake, and they're not going to know how to correct it, and then their buddies aren't going to be able to pick it up and correct it at time. You know, it's like one of the frustrating things for me that when I some of these times when I'm working in a shoe house like I have in these past few days, and it's we're set to be kind of more free flow right now. It's very structured. We have to be in specific spots because sometimes I have to intentionally make a mistake so that the students learn how to try to catch the mistakes before they happen. But when we're just free flowing and guys will get, everybody wants to be blasting the targets, right? Like we're all there. Everybody wants to go in and try to shoot as many targets as possible. And so guys will drop an angle to try to go attack, you know, a bullet trap because there's a target hanging on and they want to get their angle on that known target trap so they can get their shots off. And I suddenly find myself like constantly grabbing these other angles, and I'm like, I'm rear security. Like, this sucks. I don't want to be on rear security. I want to be at the front of the stack. I'm trying to bulldog my way back to the front of the stack, but like, here they go, dropping another angle again. So now I'm picking up the angle because I'm trying to do the right thing overall. And we get to the end of the run, and I'm expecting this to be like debriefed, but it doesn't even get picked up because I'm quick enough at this point because I've been doing it for so long that as soon as I see somebody's about to drop that, I'm like, shit, I got to pick that up. All right,
Yeah.
they're not gonna do their thing, I'm gonna pick it up. So that's, you know, that's kind of what you want it to look like. And you know, people are gonna make those mistakes, but
Yeah.
yeah, just getting too tied into the doctrine and then the ideas. And you see it with everything. It's not even just with CQB. You see with everything, people have like their experience. The biggest thing right now is people talk about drones. And I see so many people are like, oh, drones are hell. I'm like, have you even served? Have you even been in a combat zone where that's actually, or have you just watched videos and you're scared of videos? So now you're going to make this assertion that, you know, this has changed warfare and it's like war is hell. It doesn't matter what it's being waged with. It's fucking awful. So it's just these weird takes that people have on
Yeah.
things where it's just like, I have this one piece of information. It's essentially cognitive dissonance where like I have this one piece of information and no matter what, like the opinion I have formulated about this topic on this one piece of information makes my opinion valid no matter what. And anyone with a differing opinion is wrong.
Well, and we see that we see that a ton on, I mean, Instagram, which is toxic as hell, obviously, but we see that a lot. I'm talking about, you mentioned panning earlier, right? So there's a couple very loud voices in our community that repeatedly, right, are just advocating that panning is a dumb concept. It doesn't make any sense because it was only made for, or it was only invented, I think, if I'm remembering this correctly, for ships is what I had heard or something. It doesn't make sense. Make it make sense, you know, and here's the thing, in certain perspectives and certain situations, yeah, it makes no sense to execute a pan. But that's like why I feel like it's important you know both.
So it came about because everybody was doing what we now just refer to as like dynamic clearance. It's stack on the door. You know, we used to do the fucking you would knee the guy in front of you. We called it the bump. You would
That's
knee
great. That's great.
so many Charlie horses. And it was all in it, like also we did the whole this whole idea of like don't take a hand off the gun. And now we have fortunately graduated this idea of like, yeah, if I'm not in front of the stack, I can reach up and I can give the guy in front of me a squeeze so he gets out of my way so I can bring my gun up into a nice open sector. But you know, you get a signal, you stack, you get a signal of some kind, and you're just pushing the door. You're if I were to be blunt and about it, it's like, you know, you're bum rushing the door, you know. Jesus, take the wheel, and I hope that I can get into this room and scan it faster than the guys who are waiting for me. Which is not fair necessarily to it, but overall, what we found between Force on Force and then experience in combat is the one man was very, very often getting hit at the breach point in the doorway. And then a lot of, if he was getting hit, then the two man might catch rounds that were initially intended to be fired, at the one man, because the bad guy's just shooting at the door. And even on Force on Force, it gets a point, he's like, I don't want to be the one man because I'm going to get shot with these paint rounds, and then I'm going to have, an exercise control guy come over and tell me that I'm a casualty and I've got to form this out, and now I don't get to participate in the rest of the event, and you don't want to do that. And I've been shown the idea many times. So starting off as a young infantryman in the Marine Corps, we were shown pieing. You would pie windows and pie doors and pie openings and buildings, but it was designed as an external only thing. You weren't supposed to do it inside, but you're supposed to do it outside. So if I'm crossing an opening of some kind, I'm supposed to pie it off, and that's how I hold my own local security on that threat.
Yeah.
And so that was not a concept that anybody, at least in combat arms, would be unfamiliar with. But then in 2005, we were shown something that was coming from the tier one side. And they're like, hey, just, pie the door. We're like, no, you don't pie inside the building. You do that outside, right? They're like, no, like, just try it. And they even sold it to us initially that first time I was taught it as like solo tactics, as like you're one guy and you're just gonna pie the door, and then if it's a center fed room, you're gonna pick one corner and you're gonna pop in and flash that corner and duck back out, and then you'll then pop the other corner. We're like, this doesn't make sense. Like, this goes against everything we've been taught. Like, you never do this by yourself. You're always at least into with a two man team, and we operate in an eight man team. So why the hell would we ever be by ourselves? But it's like, all right, this is what these guys are here to teach us. Let's do this thing. And so we went through it, and then we talked about like, how can we make this work? Because there was, we liked the aspect of like rolling the door or panning, pieing the door, whatever,
Sure.
and then making entry. So it's like, well, how do we make it work so that we, can have long security if we're in a hallway, and we can, and protecting ourselves and do it in a team environment. And we played around with it, and we used it in country. And then I came back from that, and everyone was like, no, like, you can't do that. Like, that doesn't work. I was like, okay, well, I just literally came off a deployment using that, and it worked really fucking well. But they're like, no, you can't do this. So it's like back to, okay, just push the door, right? Going full quote unquote dynamic. And then a few years after that, I once again, guys are coming out from tier one units to work with, do a small unit exchange. And they're like, yeah. And we're pieing doors on the inside. You're rolling the door, panning door, all the same thing. I'm moving from one side of the door to the other, looking into that space, shooting any bad guys that I see to create a more safe environment for me to step through that threshold. So when I step through the threshold, as that one or two man, especially the one man, and I'm going to dig my corner, I'm not worried about some dude who's, at 12 o'clock in the room blasting at the door, because I've already shot that guy. That's like the idea behind it. And, we brought it back, we talked, but we work on it. And, then I go back to doing some training through another group. They're like, no, like, really don't do that. Like, there's certain layers, like certain scenarios where we'll do that, but otherwise we're just going to do center checks, right? The center check became the big thing, and we're doing center checks. It's like, okay. And then right at the end of my career, when I was taking over as the CQB course instructor, lead instructor, once again, go do an exchange, and these guys are saying the exact same thing, like rolling the door. And it came down early 2000s. We're going to combat, and we're finding everyone's getting shot. Not everyone, but like a high percentage of guys. And of all the guys who do get hit hit on, a structure clearance, a raid, it's in the doorway, and they're like almost always the one man. So what came of that was the center check and rolling the door. Now, part of where rolling or panning the door, I always go back to rolling the door because it's what we called it in the Marines, and panning is just something I've picked up with the Orion vernacular. But you roll the door, and the walls of the structure provide some measure of actual cover. So, like, if I roll the door and I don't ID that threat soon enough, or maybe he's not quite a threat, but he draws from concealment as I get to the other side, he can't just necessarily blast through the walls at me, right? So I have some protection. And that is a consideration, when you're going to utilize the technique, because I most assuredly cannot get into, a slugfest trying to take cover from a door frame if the construction is drywall and 2x4s.
See, and that's the pushback I always hear from people is that it doesn't make any sense to pan a door because you don't have any cover. The bullets shred drywall and it's absolutely pointless. And I'm like, well, I understand what you're saying. I don't really necessarily agree that they're just gonna, whatever opposition is just gonna start dumping rounds through the wall at you indiscriminately, not knowing where you're at.
And that's the thing is you can't. There's nothing you can do necessarily to combat that, right? Because at that same token, if they can shoot at the wall through me next to the door, well, it's not just that few feet on each side of the door that's drywall and 2x4. It's all of the walls. And so they can blast at us anywhere through the walls, anywhere. And so that's one of the reasons that we advocate, most professionals advocate for a lot of nonverbal, because if you're hollering back and forth all these different commands, then they won't even have to wait for you to get to the door. They could just start blasting through the wall because they hear you in the hallway or they hear you the next room over. They can shoot at you through their front window as you make approach, right?
Right.
Like, and it also kind of gets this whole like concept of, well, then, if I can be shot at from anywhere, then I just shouldn't go fight. And it's like, yeah, I should try to avoid a fight. And that's why you always hear, those of us who served in the military making the joke of like, yeah, if we get shot at from the target, like if we don't actually need anything in there, just pull back and drop a bomb on it. Like, congratulations. All right, you bought the ticket. Here's your ride. But bullets don't make infantry obsolete, right? It's we still have to apply tech. We still have to accomplish whatever the goal is. And so we just have to apply the techniques. Now, the fact that the walls you're working around don't provide cover is definitely a consideration. And I would say that's where speed is definitely more of your friend. Your speed will help provide security because you're going to move that structure faster. And that's why, like we talked about on the weekend, the whole idea of like dynamic or deliberate, I think everyone needs to get rid of that. That whole notion, like it's CQB, we're always trying to go fast, we're always trying to provide the maximum amount of security, we're always going for violence of action, and those things help us with surprise. Being nonverbal helps us with surprise. And then Orion, we talk about safety and security. And the safety aspect is really just like don't bite off more than you can chew. And the security aspect just goes back and make sure you're covering your ankles, right?
Yeah,
Which is stuff that everyone knows about.
you covered a lot on the rear security piece with us that I want. It's not that we hadn't learned about that before in other experiences, but just like, and it's I get it's just a difference of perspective, and neither one is right or wrong necessarily. But yeah, I mean, the thought being, hey, we cleared everything that we came from, so it's always the first thing to drop is rear security. Easily, at least in our own training, that's the way it's, whether it's right or wrong, that's the way it ended up being. It's we deprioritize rear security all the time. And I think after like the first, I don't know, maybe like 2 hours on the first day. It was like, no, that you guys are, because the question then became, well, what are the other two guys doing? You have two guys setting up on the store. There's four of you. Why aren't one of you holding security? Like, well, he's right next to the door. Yeah, but he's not protecting you from anything. Like, can't he do it from across the room? And it's like, yeah, I don't see why not. Yeah, you're right. It was this weird light bulb moment, at least for me, I'll say, where I was like, I had looked at the concept of like rear security as just, I don't know, whoever was last in the room and usually closest to the door, like that's your job. Take care of it. Not necessarily like from across the room where it'd be more efficient to put a gun on it because you have a better angle. It could be anything. It was a very closed off way of looking at it. And that was something that like really, one of the things that really resonated with me was like, you don't always have to make your rear security the greatest priority the way some people do. But to dismiss it so easily is a huge miss. That was a major takeaway for me.
Yeah, you can't ignore it. And the reality of if you're actually working in a team, and it's something that's hard, it's hard to demonstrate in like a normal open enrollment class because you at most you'll get like two friends that come together. Maybe three or four friends. You know, you might get like three officers coming from the same department, but you don't typically get like, well, we had, you know, with you bringing you and six other guys, like a whole seven man group that constantly trains together. And so it's hard to get them to a point in a 3 day class where they can understand the pace at which you move. You're not going to have time to post up and watch the rear. You know, it's something you glance at and it's something you're going to have to trade off with somebody else at some point. But when you're moving in an actual trained team, especially in a hallway, because we want out of hallways and into rooms, it's like if I come out of a room and I know we're going to another one, I pop out, I see it, and I'm turning and I'm moving with the team.
Right.
Because either they're entering that next door already because it was that close, or they're moving to the next door and I need to move with them. You know, and we talk about like the last man calls, and that's something that has been getting harped on these past few days working with the Coasties. They're like, oh, you know, there wasn't a last man call here, there wasn't a last man call here. And it's like, well, yeah, they weren't going to give me a last man call because I came out of the room, I'm looking at a dead end hallway, so I immediately turn around and I'm looking at the stack, and once the last guy exited the room, I just went with them. I didn't need a last man call because I made eye contact with that person. You know, they're not going to say it. Like, there's no need for it. And, you know, all these other situations. So it's an understanding of like, and again, with rear security, I have come in that direction, you know, and even if I had to bypass something, obviously, if I bypassed, you know, a hallway because I came to an intersection and I just chose one leg, or maybe I bypassed a closed door for an open door that was really close to it. I have to be more concerned about rear security at that point, but the team is moving in a direction and I have to move with them. I have to work with them. I can't disregard what my team is doing to pick up, you know, that rear security angle. And that's, again, one of those things that gets really hard, even training, you know, recon Marines and infantrymen, and, you know, now the Coasties for these few years. So guys will post up in that hallway as rear security, and they will lose all awareness of what that team is doing. Like, they know the team is stacking to work a door, especially when it comes time to like actually breach a door because it's locked and they've got to pull out tools or a shotgun, and they just post up and they just stand there. And the team makes entry into that room and they're still standing there. And it's like, hey, do you want to join
You
the
gonna
team?
go?
And they're like, oh, you know, and then they go running into the room to catch up. Yeah, it's a very temporary thing, you know.
It's funny too, 'cause we have a couple guys in our group that are former Army and they're National Guard now, and they've told us like straight up when they were trained, it was you get put on rear security, you don't fucking move until somebody tells you to move. Like, you have to have that very, like, I don't want to say tactile, but that, like, deliberate, that was the word, like, that deliberate last man or a tap or something, where when we're doing stuff, training on our own and everything, like, dude, just have some common wherewithal, like, check over your shoulder every 2 seconds or so and self-rescue. Like, it shouldn't, like, I get frustrated because we have a couple dudes that just never give the last man tap. Like, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, fuck you, but whatever. But at the same time, like, it's not that hard to look over your shoulder and just move with the group, like active thinking.
The whole, like, leaving a guy behind, that's on both parties. Like we talked about, like, you're an asshole if you leave your guy, on tail end Charlie in the rear, but you're also an asshole if you leave yourself out there, right? That's not the job, right? I would rather turn and, like, run into my team because they discovered that they were going towards a dead end, and, like, hey, there's no more work, and, like, oh, like, now I'm on point, going back in the other direction, then just stand there and wait. But that also comes down to, again, like, organizational. It is difficult for young leaders to capitalize on initiative-based tactics in an environment like CQB. In infantry, you become very accustomed to doing, attacks, out in the open. You get dispersion and you're doing your bounds and your rushes, and there's a certain level of initiative you expect, but it's also really easy to control because you're the squad leader. You can see your whole squad, and as a fire team leader, you can see, like, your whole fire team, and it's a very controlled chaos. And then when you get into a structure, everything is now moving at about the same pace you were outside, but because now all the little chess pieces are closer together, it seems like everything is really fast. And it's like you just kicked an anthill and everybody's going all these different directions. But if you can actually calm, there's an order to the chaos. And if you can capitalize on that, that's back into, like, we talked, like, the flooding of the target. Like, I'm just pushing, teams and assaulters into this structure so fast that to us it's completely orchestrated and organized and it makes sense. But to the adversary, it's like, holy shit. And they don't get breathing room. And we call that having momentum, into the target. And so they want so much control that it comes into the, like, you're here and you're not going to do anything until I tell you to do so. You're going to be here and you don't do anything until I tell you to do so. I mean, when I started, it was literal hall bossing. You would have, like, just a column. The platoon would be in columns on each side of the hallway. And in the center of the hallway would be a light machine gun and either the platoon sergeant or the platoon commander. And it was like, move up. And then he would tell you, like, okay, take those rooms. And then two guys would dump into each room. Or, if there's only doors on one side, they would dump in and then they would move up to the next. And it was like this bounding down the hall. And the whole idea is that, like, well, we have this light machine gun in the hall. Or sometimes, if it was a big hallway, we'd put two light machine guns up front so they can just spray bullets down the hallway if anybody tries to, like, stick guns out or come fight us in the hallway, and that's our protection. Meanwhile, like, we have, 20 guys stacked in this canalizing terrain, which we know everywhere else is bad, and we take steps to mitigate it. But now that we're in an actual structure, like, we're not going to apply those same principles anymore. Just put everybody in the hallway and just dumping two guys at a time into rooms at a very slow and deliberate, regimented process. And that was not effective and it didn't work. And we got in a country, and one of the first things that I was encountered with was we got dropped off. We had to bound across a couple hundred meters of desert into our first objective, came up to a building, and the building was basically a big C shape. And a lot of their buildings are set so there's a courtyard. And all the doors are off the courtyard. So there's gonna be like one main gate or one main door. And then you walk into this big C And now here's all the doors. And what we are trained for is that you have to have a gun on every door. And I peek around the corner and I'm like, there's like 30 doors. I need the whole platoon over. So I start calling for support. And I'm thinking that like I'm gonna call for support and my squadron's gonna come up. He's like, what do you need? And be like, I need the whole platoon over here to hold security on these doors. And I said that, and he's like, you need to figure it out. I'm like,
No.
what? And now I wouldn't do anything. I would just start clearing the rooms. And I understand that, you know, we're going to hold well enough security for what we're going to do. But the most important thing is to get into a room and fight room to room to room, which is what we kind of end up doing with me and my fire team. But the entire time that we would exit a room, I was like, this is where we die. I'm like, as soon as we exit and we turn our back to these other doors to try to get into this next one, like 12 dudes are going to come out with AKs and just blast us in the back because we're trying to make entry in this room over here. And, you know, got all the way around and that didn't happen. But I was like, this is not what we trained for. Like, we spent all this time and none of that training was like actually applicable to what we're doing here.
Right.
And so it did not give me a lot of confidence moving forward. So there's all this stuff, but still people will go on a deployment like that and they'll experience something like that. Like, well, I didn't die, therefore what I did is what's right, or what I
Yeah,
did
it
works.
must be good.
Yeah. It's like, no, not really. You know, I mean,
No,
even
I mean.
stuff that I was doing on my first deployment in Force Recon, it's like, yeah, that was better than what I was doing in the infantry. But now I'd be like, that dude was slow. That dude was dumb. Like, we were not using, you know, intelligent tactics because we were still kind of stuck in like some doctrinal dogma.
Yeah, and I mean, and you see it in the community in the industry now too, is because guys will take some of that or a lot of that stuff just because it worked for them, you know, and they got out in 05 or something, right? And they'll take that and they'll repackage it and they'll resell it as modernized training here to civilians and open enrollment courses and things. And it's really outdated. I mean, and you know, for good or for or bad. We have access to so much information today. It's pretty easy if you have any kind of context to understand what that stuff is, why it doesn't work. Like, I've had people tell me, you never pull everybody into a room. There's no reason. Why would you ever give up the hallway? And I'm like, well, I mean, I understand that that would be advantageous if you could realistically hold it if you have enough people. But if there's only two of us, why would we put one of us in a room to clear solo and one of us in a hallway to hold security, you know, that he can't even provide because he can't cover future and past at the same time. And it's just some of that stuff where I, you know, as a student, right, as somebody who's trying to wrap my brain around a lot of this and understand, like, is it a situational tactic? You only have two people, or is that like, hey, this is what we did and it worked, so we believe it's right? I would always, you know, with two people, even four people, I would rather pull everyone into the room and fight room to room. And
Yeah.
this temporarily moving down that hallway. But I get weird looks when I say that shit to people sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it even goes back to like being in a platoon. You know, if we make our initial breach and it is a hallway and there's dual rooms off of this hallway left and right, it's like, yeah, the first team they come in, they dump into a room, and the second team's right behind them. So as soon as, you know, the fourth man of team one is through his door, the point man for team two is coming through the breach. Now he's got the hallway again, you know, but then they dump into a room. And as their last guy, you know, the third guy's coming up. So we're quote unquote owning this hallway and dropping it for like maybe a second or so as this next team comes in behind. And then ideally, like we talked about, where Taman, that fourth team is making entry. The first team, their point man is back in his door looking down that hall. So now he's picking up that hull and it's only been dropped for, you know, a second. But we still never viewed it as like we actually own the hallway. We understand that it is dangerous terrain to travel on. And so we don't want to be there. And we don't ever try to leave somebody in the hall or even necessarily like trying to look down the hall. It's be with your team, What is your team doing? Your team is clearing that room, then you need to be a part of that. And we talk about it in the courses, and we talked about it, with our weekend up at Ben Franklin, is if you're on, long security on the hall and your team dumps into the room, if I don't hear shooting or verbal commands, that tells me that there's nothing immediately in that room that they're seeing. And you could conceivably like take a step back and a step to the side because you understand where you're at in reference to the door, and just kind of like post up in the door frame and trusting that your team is going to be working that room so that you're protected as you come in. Personally, I am always going to turn towards the room, walk through the door, looking into the room so I can see what's going on. And if I immediately assess that the team doesn't need my help and the only place to go is right back out the door we just came through, then yeah, I'll turn and I'll post up and I'll start looking back down the hallway to continue to try to rent it for longer. And that way we are better protected when we step back out into it. I'm not a fan of just like backing into the room. And if I hear any kind of verbal commands, or especially shooting, I am 100% going to walk into that room and I am going to be a part of the solution.
Yeah, you apply everything that you fundamentally normally would if you had made entry to begin with, right? Like, I'm the fourth man in, I'm picking up the center of the room, I'm scanning, looking for my friends and everything. Like, it's really nothing different. It's just applying the same skill at a different point in the problem-solving process.
And like, I had you guys go through, it's like, get the fourth man in, let him scan his sector. The reality is, the fourth man comes in, your scan is basically gonna be your weapon's gonna snap up and you're gonna bring it right back down, because by the time you're through the door, that one and two man have hit their points of domination and they're ready to move again. So you looking around, you're actually delaying the process. And you guys had a pretty good grasp on that. I was just trying to slow you down to make sure everybody was actually seeing the room. And that, because that's an important part when you are working with folks, like make sure everyone's actually seeing the room and the problem at hand. Because it's really common, like you're saying, whoever that last guy is through the door, they don't even look at the room. They're like, I'm just going to step through the door and I'm going to turn around and pick up rear security. And if that's your mindset, like we didn't get to a point where we could add targets, but you take any of those room setups that we drilled on, and if you add just a shoot target, now that changes things, because now we have to close with that target and confirm that, this threat that we shot is no longer a threat. And then I make it more complicated. You think it's complicated with bad guys. Bad guys are easy. You just shoot them and they're done. But I put someone who is not an immediate threat, they're not presenting something that says you need to shoot them. So now you need to go secure them. You need to go, put cuffs on them. Well, that takes more people. And so now what else has to be covered in order to provide the safety that's necessary to close on this individual and secure them? And if that guy always just steps in, turns around, he's just gonna be standing there watching that door. And we're going to have people covering doors and trying to work dead space and just staring at this, unknown in the room. And we go to vapor lock. And then that unknown starts cycling through their decision process. And maybe they decide that they want to become a combatant. Maybe they did have something that we didn't recognize and they now decide to put it into play. But if we move fast, that speed, but you can't have that if someone's just going to step through the door and just bail on the team and watch for your security.
And I was going to ask you, like, is that if that was something how you did it with coming from the military, obviously with like Jared and Jason, very law enforcement centric, like cover contact, build your ideally a 90 degree angle, but you know, don't flag your buddy going to put hands on that target or secure that individual. Because I've, you know, and I think the rules of engagement or whatever anybody wants to call it would still remain close to the same, as you still have to spot the threat. You have to identify if they truly are. Hey, is there something in their hand? Don't just see a target and pop them in the head because they existed, you know, in the course of fire or wherever you're moving. You know, you have to be able to see and identify that, right?
So, like the ROEs change as far as like who can I engage, who meets, the basis that we have is, hostile act, hostile intent, and then, you got to make sure you sit down and understand exactly what that means, but that changes slightly. And there have been periods, in Iraq and Afghanistan where it wouldn't have seemed all that different. One key thing was I had my first time up at Ben Franklin. I was working with a group of guys that had worked with OTG prior, and I set up the room. We were doing targets, and they enter the room. And I expected to hear like some bang bangs because we were dry, but we were just voicing the shots. And instead of bang bangs, I hear them do a cover contact drill without saying bang bang. And I'm like, okay, maybe he just didn't verbalize the bang bang. That's fine. But then they said cuffed. And I was like, wait a minute. That target is holding a gun. So when I asked him about the room, I'm like, hey, why didn't you guys shoot that target? And they're like, well, he wasn't pointing the gun at us because the little Sobek Designs tac pack I had, it's just a hand and it's kind of holding the gun like down, but it's not pointed, at the observer. And I was like, yeah, but he has a gun. Like you're making entry, he has a gun. They're like, oh, we worked with Will. And Will was like, yeah, you throw commands, you give him to drop the gun. I was like, okay, yeah. So that's, his experience and his ROEs, right? As a law enforcement officer, you're not trying to go in there and kill everybody. So if they're not, pointing the gun at you do try to give commands, but you're on my station now. And when you enter a room and people have weapons, you fucking kill them. I think I actually said we murder people here.
That's awesome.
And they're like, and they had that same reaction and they laughed. And I was like, I get it. And I'm not taking away, like, that's Will's experience and that makes a ton of sense. My experience is obviously something different, but that's where like that disparagement comes in between like military and law enforcement. The cover contact drill, like that's the same thing. The one where we tend to differ is for the way that it's running with OTG is whether it's a dead check or I'm gonna go secure a person, it's always two. Make sure you have a cover man and someone who's gonna go hands-on to either cuff or do the dead check. For us, for the economy of forces, and because there can be so many angles and pieces of work, we just do one for dead checks. Because if I'm going to go hands-on with a person, I need to put my rifle in a position where they can't easily get a hold of it and try to mess me up with it. It's hard to like turn someone's rifle on them if it's slung, but you can still, make a nuisance of yourself. So we try to put it in retention, get it out of the way, and then go hands on. But if I'm approaching someone that got blasted, whether I did it or maybe he got blasted by, somebody else that came in the room before me and he's on the floor, I'm going to approach him with my gun in my hand. And if at some point that subject does something that makes me believe they're not only still alive, but able to fight me or trying to fight me, then I'm just going to shoot them again. So I'm holding my own security into it. And that's not really a military versus law enforcement thing. That's just like a personal philosophy and personal experience. You could argue it either way, and Jared has really good, valid reasons for encouraging you to always use two and have that cover man. But we can set thing and it gets really tricky. And then you have to start like working your priorities in a really smart way to make sure you're facilitating. Whereas if you just use one, it can free some things up. So I prefer to use one, and I'll usually talk about that in classes, and I'll set rooms up so like it makes sense to just use one guy, and it's a discussion that we have. But other than like who can I actually immediately shoot, by the side of them, that's what's truly different between military and law enforcement.
I try to enforce when we're training and stuff, like make sure we're properly identifying the targets, because we'll have guys that, not within the group that came out and traveled with us, but like other dudes that will just hit a room and they see a target and they just blast, like full sends, doesn't matter if it's a cell phone that's drawn on the target or whatever, just indiscriminately will shoot. And it's like, all right, cool, everybody wants to shoot. Why did you do it? Like, you know what I mean? Giving them the absolute like question of what would happen if you actually did, shoot somebody and they were holding a phone, not a gun. 'Cause I'm not a teacher, but at the same time, like, if we want to actually get to a higher level of discipline and be able to move more efficiently and perform at a higher level, like that's a big piece of it, is shoots and no shoots. You can't just indiscriminately run through and, fuck everybody's day up.
We did it in one of the recent courses, and the training audience that I work with outside of Ryan, it's basically a law enforcement, and there's this one, we call them cartoon targets, but it's the big photograph, it's life size cut out. So there's one cartoon target, and it's meant to be an ambiguous target, and a lot of them are positioned in such a way that it'll be a no shoot, but you could paste, a weapon or something over it, and its body language looks like they're actually holding the weapon, and it's advantageous. So this particular one, it looks like a man improperly wearing female Arab garb, like he's trying to conceal his identity. It looks like he's holding something under the shawl and everything that's draped over his hands. And he's got a super big, there's like clearly he's got like a huge dive watch or something on his wrist, imprinted by this shawl that's over his face. So we made entry. The first two targets we encountered was a guy in body armor. So it's like we shoot two guys with body armor. We enter the third room, and hiding in a corner is this person. And so we just blasted it. And they're like, why are you shooting? That's an unknown. And we're like, okay, well, we entered, and these are the TTPs that we've been seeing from the enemy. And we just shot two guys with body armor. Like, that's clearly this dude's PA, his security detail. He was trying to hide. He had his hands up underneath, trying to conceal something that's not proper female attire. We don't know if he had an initiating device. There is precedent for them to try to suicide themselves if they're being captured. So we just blasted him in the face because we believed to a high enough degree that that was somebody trying to conceal a suicide vest or even just a grenade. So we just blasted him. And now that in itself, in a lot of situations, like would not be, an acceptable answer. But the point of the exercise was to kind of like wake up the students of, because they're not always domestic. They do deploy forward with special operations teams because the titles and authorities that they provide. So it's like, yeah, that could be a valid ROE, based on where you're working and what the enemy TTPs are. I mean, if I breach your door, if I'm some third world country that we are conducting operations in, and I blow up your front door, and your first instinct is to grab a flashlight and come charging down the dark hall, you're probably going to get shot because flashlights are often enough attached to firearms. If you just charge down the hallway, period, you're probably going to get shot if it's an area where a lot of people put on suicide vests or suicide belts and attempt to detonate themselves on the entry team. Like, You may have just been panicking and running down the hallway, but since we've already encountered, years of people attempting to suicide themselves and blow us up too, I'm going to shoot you before you get too close. And it's unfortunate if I'm wrong. That's not good, and I'll have to live with that. But if I'm right, then that's one life lost compared to my whole 4 or 5 man team.
Yeah. And it highlights the importance of being able to like think and process quickly. I think the whole conversation inside a structure, it exacerbates that. Like we saw it with a couple of our guys who hadn't been through as much, where you could tell them they're just looking around, right? They're watching for cues from everybody else because they don't yet understand, I think, like reflexively how to solve problems in a room, let alone what you're talking about here, where you in an instant spot a target, see what doesn't seem right, and then make that very permanent decision, right? Flip off the safety, pull the trigger.
I say even something, more widely applicable. It's like if my front door gets kicked in the middle of the night, well, one, that's already hostile intent because I have at least 2 cars in the driveway, if not 3 or 4. So you have to know somebody's home, right? But you're going to kick in my door regardless. So if I come to the stairs and this person's at the bottom of the stairs and they try charging up the stairs. Now, I don't know exactly the legalities of it, but if I identify myself and I have a firearm trained on you and you try to charge up the stairs at me, I have no reason to believe that you have friendly intent at that point.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not going to wait for you to reach me to see if you just want to like really vigorously shake my hand to introduce yourself because you're new to the neighborhood. Like, I'm sorry. You kicked in my door in the middle of the fucking night. I'm pissed off. I'm gonna have to replace that. And now you just try charging up the stairs at me while I have a gun. You're gonna go back down that stairs really fast and wet.
Yeah.
And then I'll deal with whatever has to come over that afterwards, right? So there's a lot of like nuance into that and things you have to think about, but the basics of like getting guys to do target ID is that's one of those things you can take back out to the range, and you can keep it really, really simple of you just take your IP6 and you kind of go like competition style and some of them are brown side forward, some of them are white side forward. And you have your buddy, he just faces up range. You set up the targets a certain way. And then on the timer, you'd be like, hey, you're gonna have up to 4 targets, and you've got 8 seconds to process and only shoot the shoot targets. You're gonna shoot brown. And you hit the timer, they have to turn ID and engage, the brown side targets. And you could flip it on them and you can make them shoot the white side targets only. And that's also a bit of a cluster is like if you keep doing that and you like, oh, only shoot the brown targets, but you just change where the brown targets are and the white ones never have holes in them, then guys just start looking for shot holes, and they shoot shot holes. And I would do that in the shoot house. I would take a target that had already been shot and I would paste empty hands over the gun. And they would enter the room and they would see a target with shot holes and they would shoot it. I'm like, why can't you hit a target? Like, well, it had already been shot. I'm like, not on this run.
Yeah,
Like
training
that's an
first.
unknown. Like, look at it. And sometimes guys would come in and it would be a fresh, unknown target, and one dude would shoot it, and everyone else in the room would shoot it. Like, why'd you shoot it? So the first guy is like, oh, I just didn't ID. Like I shot 2 other targets. I saw that one. I was just in shoot mode and I just shot. And I'm like, all right, well, that's not the right answer. That's dumb. Like, why the rest of you guys shoot it? Like, you guys were already done. You watched this last guy come in the room and blast that, and then you decided to shoot it. They're like, well, he shot it, so we shot it. I'm like, okay. So that's also really poor reasoning. And now, on one hand, I commend you for being a team, because now you all get to go to Leavenworth as a team. I'm like, I get it. Hey, the team that, you know, rides together, dies together, like that's great, but now you also all screwed yourselves. So it's like,
Right.
let's be smarter and then we can just fix these errors. But yeah, you could start that just on the flat range, and then you can get like the hand packs from like Silpik Designs or Medusa Targets. I'm sure there's a handful of others that just make like little easy stick on, you know, guns and hands and cell phones and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, hey, face up range, you set the targets a certain way. And then on the timer, right? So there's a bit of that stress of like, I have to do this within a certain time period. Hey, turn and shoot, you know, and they turn and on the timer and they've got to engage the correct targets.
Yeah,
I was
it's
that.
a lot of extra processing and stress. When we were in class with Jared and Jason, usually it was just push-ups. Like if you shot a no shoot, we had to agree, which is always like one of those like weird moments where you're like, we haven't done anything yet, but in the event one of you guys fucks up, how many push-ups do you like want per shot? We're like, I don't know. Someone's like 10. I'm like, no, you dumbass. Like, it's way too high. And then, of course, like, we get done with the first run, and one of the guys had a, it was either an airsoft or a sim gun, and he fucking shot Jason on three separate instances. Not like he shot him once, three times. Like, he ran into him on the course of fire three times and shot him incorrectly. So he comes back to like, all right, we're doing 30 push-ups because Kyle fucking shot me or something, whatever the guy's name was. I'm like, dude, really? Like the first one, you didn't figure out after that that like Jason's basically almost out of play on everything unless you're fucking something up. It was pretty upsetting. Like my brother was, that was the first time through class. He goes, wait a minute, why are we doing push-ups? Like, because we do it together. Yeah, but we didn't, it wasn't our group. I was like, that doesn't fucking matter. Start pushing the ground. Come on. And then everybody, wisens up pretty quick, like, hey, you fucking pay attention and like take an extra beat to think about it before you do it.
And that's important too. It's like you do want penalties, because if there is no, because like in training, if you shoot an unknown target, there's no real penalty to it, but you can make a penalty. And you know, it's something as simple as push-ups. Obviously for us, you know, the profession of arms, like you're going to receive a written statement, you know, a negative counseling. And it's not something that will follow you for your career, but like at least for right now, at this in this platoon, at this unit, or this schoolhouse, like this is going to count against you. And if you continue to make that same mistake, especially, but even similar mistakes, like you can only get so many of those, you know, negative statements before it's like, hey, you're no longer allowed to participate in training. And we would do things like if you shoot an unknown or something like that, you would you know, go run this hill or pick up the rescue Randy, and you got to run him to the flagpole that's a mile away. Or if you don't have rescue Randy, you got to pick up your buddy in his full kit, and you get a fireman's carry him, you know, a mile away. Like, and when we would do it as a team, like I messed up my first package, and you know, I shoot my first unknown, and I'm freaking out because I know I can only I'm allowed three of those, and I shot one. And I shot one. It's like the second week of in the House of Tactics. I'm like, fuck, it is way too soon. And it's like, okay, I know I've got to run, you know, Hostage Hill when the day is done. And the team leader's like, all right, everybody kid up. He's like, we're all running it. He's like, Blake, you better beat us to the top, but we're all running the hill. And I'm like, fuck, I feel even worse now. Like
Yeah.
it's one thing if I have to run it by myself because I messed up, but now my whole team is paying with me. And then my team leader just put in additional consideration that I've got to be the first one to the top of the hill. I was like, crap, this has got way worse, you know, but pain retains.
That's true.
Now, and some people take that too far. There are varying ways of inflicting, you know, supposed pain. And one of those is honestly just like ball busting. Like you just don't let someone forget the time they made that mistake. So
Yeah.
you just keep at it, and they're gonna get frustrated and they get upset, but they're not gonna make that mistake again because they don't like hearing about it the first time, and they know if they do it again, it's just gonna get worse.
Some people don't deal with that very well. They have very fragile egos, I've experienced, and they don't like when instructors do that to them because it hurts their feelings. I'm like, yeah, but you didn't fucking do it again, and you haven't done it since. So like, clearly it fucking worked. Like that, I think it shows a lack of understanding of like actual teaching methods. You know, it's not to be a dick. I mean, sometimes it is, but it's usually not to be a dick. It's like, well, I could either physically find a way to make you suffer a little bit, or maybe this is emotional, right? Either way, like if that's what sticks with you the most, if physical doesn't bother you because you're in really great shape, right? You got to find another way to, inflict a little pain. And for a lot of us, we're not in great shape, so physical works just fine. For other guys, like you got to just fuck with their heads a little bit. It's like, dude, it's not personal. They're not a bad teacher because of it. They just knew the right way to fuck with you, and you're upset about it. So like, I don't know, get over it.
That's another part of like the whole that gets more into like leadership is then understanding like how do you approach each guy to get to him. Because you got guys who, like you can just yell at them and they're like, got it. And then you got some dudes who are like you have to go over and like put a hand on their shoulder, like, hey, I need you to go secure that door over there, okay? And they're like, got it. And they go secure the door. It's like, oh, okay. Everyone has like their own method that you kind of have to communicate with them, or I found that like the disappointed father,
Oh shit.
that one works really well, but you can't just pull that out. That also then requires you, and this is kind of getting away from the topic, it requires you to build that kind of rapport, whether it's your team, your platoon, your group of friends, or like a lot of times in my case, it's a group of students. You like build that rapport with them. So like your dad, in some way, you're a father-like figure of authority, and they make a mistake, and you're like, really thought you were better than that. And they'll be like, oh man, like he's upset with me, he doesn't believe in me anymore. And it's effective, and yeah, you just got to figure it out, and it is tough. And, I can see like you guys group, like you have a really good dynamic. And that's, we were able to accomplish a lot more in that weekend than we would have if it had been the class for the charity event that was supposed to happen. Because there just would have been a lot of people like I was meeting for the first time, and they were meeting each other for the first time, and so it would have been harder for them to, because now you're trying to figure out how to work with this other person. Because you guys, train on a fairly regular basis, it was pretty easy. Minus, the one guy that just hadn't done a whole lot of CQB before. Matters like just trying to catch him up, but he still did well enough for considering, his lower level of experience with it all.
Yeah, that's what we met up at one of the travel plazas on the turnpike on the way home. We're like, dude, I'm pretty sure that's like two and a half or 3 days worth of shit that we crammed into like a day and a half, man. Like the only stuff we really didn't get into was long, like putting that all together and making like a long string of fire. Like when Jared and Jason were up here 2 years ago and they did a class, that was a 3 day course right there. You know, intersections and hallways and obviously all your corner fed, center fed. We didn't do closed and open, closed doors because we didn't have any at that facility at the time. But still, like that's a lot to fit into a day and a half. And it was pretty constant too, because like you said, there's only seven of us, so like you weren't sitting around waiting for a bunch of groups of guys to roll through it and stuff. Like we were churning through stuff pretty decent. It was a fun weekend for sure. We got a lot done.
Yeah, it was a great time. And it was kind of nice that you guys were like a group, a cohesive group, because you guys showed up, you had all your stuff. So we just like broke, took lunch break, just stayed down at the shoot house. Normally it's at least go back up to the lodge, and then there's usually like one guy who like needs to run into Katanning to the gas station and grab some food. So like he needs the hour long break to like get his running back. And so it's always like an hour long break, and it kind of takes away, but we were down there, we were taking like 30, maybe 45 minutes, because we started like chit chatting a little bit, but it was quick breaks and then right back into the house. So That made it a
Yeah,
lot easier to get more done.
we had it all planned out. Like, 'cause we did it last year too, where we didn't want to, like, during the event, right? We didn't want to leave. So we're like, oh, we'll just bring a bunch of sandwich stuff. We'll just bring, like, tons of lunch meat and bread and shit. And we'll just, if we need more, if we need to eat more, we'll just make more sandwiches. But yeah, we're like, no, we're not gonna. As soon as we figured out, like, the very first year we went, how kind of remote the facility is, we're like, we're not fucking driving back into town. That's like 35 minutes each way. It's just not. I mean, it's not that bad, but it's just not worth it. So yeah, I think we kind of had it nailed down. We're just gonna be there, and it was what it was. So if you bring enough food, cool. If you don't, then that's gonna suck, and you're gonna just have to order more at dinner. But
Yeah.
it was a good time. But yeah, man. So we appreciated the weekend, and obviously appreciate you sitting down, going through kind of rehashing a bunch of what we did, talking through all this stuff. Like, I think with a lot of us having gone through it, that was one of the things that I really appreciated was the level of detail and nuance that you were able to give on everything that we got into. it really, really appreciated all of that. And I think honestly, the two biggest takeaways for me were, like, rear security, and I like the hallway formation that you did better than what we were doing before. Like, the heavy head. So I was trying to figure out, like, okay, somebody started moving. Who gave a squeeze? Well, I didn't fucking squeeze. So maybe we're going to the left, and then half the time it's like, well, we weren't moving, so I just squeezed. I wanted to go to the right. I'm like, okay, well, fuck. Now the whole thing's shot. I think what I don't know if there's an actual name for what that formation is with two in the front and, two behind, but.
I mean, we joked, and then, it looked like, two balls leading the cock.
Yeah.
But no, there's no real name for the formation. It's just, hey, we try to put two guns in the front and the guys are behind. And I always draw where it's like they're centered in the hallway. But honestly, you come out and you see the next thing coming. So you just kind of bias to that side of the hallway. It's like, oh, the next door is on the right. I'm gonna stack behind the guy on the right. It's on the left. I'm gonna stack behind the guy on the left, and then we're gonna push that way. Or like we got a little bit of the opposing door. So it's like, oh, there's opposing doors, so maybe we're gonna take them down simo. So now they're gonna each stack, so you have a two and a two, and you give the squeeze, and you both go, like, whatever it's gonna be.
I did enjoy that a lot more just because it was like less guesswork, less we've had tons of issues on our own trying to train heavy head. I like it, but I think we're probably gonna adopt that just because it is gonna save me a lot of suffering and mental bandwidth trying to just
The big
work
thing
through
is
that shit.
that having that primary direction and clear too, so that
Yeah.
way you don't have to make a call, like which way are we going at the hallway intersection. I've got two doors, like which one am I taking first? Like we're clearing left. We're just gonna take the leftmost thing first, unless there's very obvious stimulus to drive us to something else, or something a
Yeah.
higher priority, right? Then you go to that first. And it we didn't really get into it because we're just kind of training the auspices of like the four-man team level. But then when you have like multiple teams and maybe you're breaching multiple points, and it comes in, there's some coordination pieces that have to be considered there. But if you guys are just, coming in from the same breach point, it's pretty simple to just keep clearing that way.
Yeah, no, that's that was another good one too, because previously we had just done skinning the ship, like, oh, we'll just go, exterior most rooms, but that's not always completely foolproof either, just depending on the layout. And we've certainly had a lot of luck with that, but then also, some issues too. So a bunch of stuff that was like, I don't want to say it was only supplemental, but it really helped fill the gaps on where we're like, I wish there was a better way to do this. Really helpful. So it was an awesome weekend, and I love the facility. Every time I'm able to go out there, Ben Franklin's outstanding. And I know you guys are out there quite a bit, but just before we wrap here, is there, I know you have a website if people want to look into. I don't know if you do open enrollment for CQB and stuff, but I know you're at Ben Franklin a lot doing this with Orion and everything. Where can people get a hold of you?
So for training, the best place right now is just to go to the Orion Training Group website. It's www.oriontraininggroup.com. Then I have all the classes, and right now our one East Coast venue really is Ben Franklin Range, trying to develop some other ones. I have my own little company, Maneuver Training Solutions. I don't have anything on the schedule, and I don't know when I'll be posting my next classes because there's a bunch of stuff in flux right now. But that's all local to North Carolina. Hopefully there'll be another venue developing here close by soon. So you'll see some classes for me through my company, some classes through Orion. A lot of it will be focused around CQB. We also do range classes. I do mostly range classes through my company. And then, I'll plug the socials of Instagram, Blakewater0326. And that's just, I just try to put out a lot of information on equipment and field craft and, tactical logistics for a lack of better term.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good term for it because you get into like everything from water purification to layering and setting up your rifles and stuff. So a lot of good information there. But yeah, man, I appreciate the time. I know we kind of scrambled a little bit to pull this together, but really enjoyed the perspective and the information. It's always good to touch base. I'll definitely be in touch, man, and we'll talk soon.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
So a great amount of insight and detail there. I think I don't even know what I was necessarily expecting, but I was not expecting that we got into all of that. But very, very glad that we did. Our group trip was, I would say, a huge success. And I think if it's something that you can ever logistically pull together, and as somebody who logistically handled a lot of our trip, just forewarning, it can be a lot and it can definitely have its headaches. But being able to bring a group of your friends that you train with on the regular out to some kind of, instructional event. And hey, cost is a consideration. I totally get that, right? But it helped us a ton to get through a lot of information, in a very short amount of time. While most of us trained together, our one buddy had never done this before, and then Daniel doesn't really train with us, honestly. He came up from Columbus, so he was kind of just adapting and improvising into our group. Did a fantastic job. He's a tremendous human being. We love him, so that's why we keep him around, and he's so darn good looking. But we had a tremendous weekend with a lot of learning, and from the context that Blake was able to add here, right? You understand it's not a very clear-cut black and white subject and discussion. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of development, in the past, 20, 30 years, something like that. The way that the military, and then as a result of that, law enforcement and obviously civilian instruction, right, has really changed based off the lessons that have been learned on the battlefield through the War on Terror. And it's very funny when you hear people who have been through the curriculum, right? They were active duty in whatever branch, Army, Marines, whatever, where they learned structure clearance, they learned CQB, they learned Battle Drill 6, right? And then you go talk to people at the tier one levels and go, no, do it this way. And then you come back and they go, no, we're going back to the old way of doing it. And you bounce back and forth because people are so set in the institutionalized ways of doing things that they have that they just can't let go of it. And you see that with a lot of former, service folks. And that's not to throw shade or be, I'm not trying to be outwardly disrespectful, but if there's something I have learned in my time doing all this, it's that you have to call a spade, right? If that's wrong, if it's outdated, if there's disadvantages to it, if it's whatever, like you have to be able to say those things. Now, a lot of it comes down to how you present the message. Certainly, you could be more professional or less professional. And in this community, what I've experienced is the guys very much tend to be less professional and they hide behind a fucking keyboard. And I think that's why we have a lot of the issues that we have in this community is just that we are poor communicators with strong egos. And oftentimes that leads to some really, really stupid shit going down. And that's not to say that everybody's always going to agree on this stuff at the highest levels. Certainly, there's some pretty strong voices that have some really great backgrounds that speak in different directions. They do CQB this way. These other guys, they do CQB that way. Both can be true. I think that once you start learning this, once you understand the fundamentals for yourself, you should just make up your mind on what you believe works best for your mission and your goals. It's the same as anything else in training. It's like guys that go out and set up their rifle based completely off of what their best friend or somebody else does, and it's like, no, dude, that's not the way you should do that. You really shouldn't do that. You shouldn't make it work for you for what you like, and then run with that. So, if you guys are interested in that stuff, Blake is on the Cadre at Orion Training Group, and they offer a lot of structure clearance courses all over the country. And I can't say enough how much I've been able to learn from these gentlemen, both in class and then with follow-on discussions. Like I don't just go to take a class and then like, hey, will you come on my podcast? And then never talk to these guys again. Like a lot of these guys are my friends now, and I, you know, try to have these relationships and you know, learn from them and develop myself. And it's cool because they're all very much invested, right, in the community and helping people get better, helping people learn, develop, grow those skills. And that's why, you know, as a student, as a consumer, right, that's why I've constantly gone back to them. And why, you know, there's even some companies that are a little bit maybe more local, have more opportunities and stuff. Like, I just, you know, I'd rather bring some of these guys into our own backyard because I know they're great teachers that people want to learn from versus some of the other alternatives that we have available. There's not many. I feel like Michigan is a total, you know, black hole for training, but, you know, I've learned a ton from all of these guys. And I encourage you, if you have questions, if you want to learn, if you want to know, reach out to Blake, reach out to any of the Orion cadre. I've never reached out to any of them that I can think of with a serious question, really needing help, really needing an answer, and not gotten a good response, a good quality, helpful response from them. So can't say enough nice things about the company. But obviously, Blake, you know, willing to take the time to come drive up from North Carolina to Pennsylvania to hang out with us for, you know, the weekend. We did dinner, right? We a couple nights of dinner, hung out, you know, told some stupid stories and stuff, some jokes and all that, but just a ton of learning. And man, it is the coolest way. I'll tell you, it is the coolest way you can spend a weekend, you know, out in the hills of Pennsylvania at Ben Franklin in the shoot house, just with the dudes getting stuff done. It's an awesome feeling. And the really cool part is seeing guys who hadn't really done a ton of heavy training before, like reaching out after going, man, I don't want to go back to work today. I wish we were still there doing this. 'Cause it is, it's just a really good way to spend your time, and obviously get away from some screens, get away from life and stuff like that. But really, really fantastic stuff. But at any rate, actually, you know, we did also record a video on YouTube, Blake and I did. So if you guys are listening to this and you liked what Blake had to say and had to share here on this this discussion, right, we did a video on YouTube talking about the various different night vision setups that everybody brought to the event. So there's like 8 of them that we go through. We talk about a bunch of different, you know, helmets and pads and stuff. If you guys want to go check it out and support Prepared Mindset, you can also go check out Blake's channel on YouTube and Instagram. He is quite literally a wealth of knowledge. And if there's anything that you have questions on, I'm pretty sure to at least some extent or some degree, he's got a video out there that helps to address it. So, thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening to this one. I hope you enjoyed it. I sure as hell did. That's all I have for you guys this week. So until next time, you guys stay safe out there. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.